that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rippin'.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Another episode today. We've got our good pal Charlie back in the studio. Charlie, welcome back.
Nice to be back. I'm a full golf sicko now.
Yeah. So it's been a little bit since we've caught up. Take you back to 2018, I think, or summer of 2019, my bachelor party, Pinehurst, was really the epicenter of Charlie striping irons and starting to get back into the game. So before we get into it, you had a visit. We're going to talk on this podcast about Charlie's recent visit back to Pinehurst, as we in the Member Guest podcast army attempt to help Charlie with his game, help him get to the level that he wants to be at. And so we're going to dig into his trip to Pinehurst and all the nitty gritty details. Give me like a high level. How are you feeling right now?
I got beat up by the course.
Okay.
When you get back into golf, you have that first period where you only get better. And that's particularly accentuated. I live in Washington, D.C., and I'm playing mostly D.C. Muni courses where you're always hitting off of grass. Mm-hmm. And so you just feel like, oh, I rock. This game isn't that hard. I'm going to consistently get better. And then you go to a place like Pinehurst and you're hitting out of the forest on pine straw and you're hitting shots backwards. And you have to take a look in the mirror and realize that some days you win, some days you learn. There's a lot of learning after three rounds of Pinehurst.
Yeah, absolutely. And hard courses is a thing, right? Like, do you know much about like course rating?
I actually just set up a USGA account to get a handicap.
Love it.
And give you like a course yes. rating for each course. So I'm starting to see that now.
Yeah, so whatever that score is that you shoot at the DC Muni, if you shoot the same score on like Pinehurst number two, it's very different from like a handicap adjustment or index perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so that makes sense. I did not shoot the same scores.
So before we get into it, just general catch up. How's the podcast going? Like how are things going?
Podcast is great. If any of your listeners want a football podcast that is not going to talk over your head or talk like a complete meathead, listen to the Dominique Foxworth Show featuring me. It's really good. It's like Dominique's one of the smartest people I know, and definitely one of the smartest people talking about football out there. He's former NFL DB, worked for the NFL PA, the NBA PA, went to Harvard Business School, became a writer. Very qualified.
I didn't really even realize all those things about him. So he's like legitimately just an incredible human.
Oh yeah, he's the man. and so we have a great rapport because like, you know this, I'm obsessed with sports and know a ton about sports, but I talk about it purely from the fan perspective, from the perspective of like what you can read online, what you can see, and push him from the player perspective. And we love each other and butt heads on many, many things.
Yeah, it's a great product. Can we talk for like a couple minutes off topic about the Commandos and what we're looking at here?
Did you see the report today? Tom Pelissero said they're locking in all that McCarthy.
I mean, I don't know how true that is because they've been linked to everyone now. He said his exact report was that he talked to other executives that know Adam Peters who think that it's likely that they'll take McCarthy. What do you think about that?
I think it's a smokescreen. I still think we're taking Drake May.
You think we're taking Drake May, really?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's when push comes to shove, we're going to take the big body, the big arm, the guy who is number two all year. I mean, I honestly, like, my feelings on it are Drake May should be the second pick in the draft. I would not be upset if they took Jaden Daniels. He's dynamic. He's awesome, but I have concerns about breakout age, which I do think matters. The fact that he was his fifth year of college football when he became an elite quarterback. And he's throwing to two guys who are going to take it in the top 15. That's not to say he won't be awesome. And I could, like, I mean, if there's one thing I've learned in the, like, 2 years of podcasting and doing this on-air stuff, is that the more you get into the draft, the more you end up with egg on your face. Like,
right.
5 years ago, I could have been like, Sam Darnold's definitely better than Josh Allen. That easily, if I had been on air, that easily could have been something I said. So, like, take every, I'm going purely off of vibes.
And nobody knows, what's going to happen. The advanced analytics on Jaden are a little concerning, like his pressure to sack ratio. He doesn't throw over the middle a lot. But I just think that the floor is so much higher than Mace because of the running. And so I just think if you're going to take a guy that high, it's like, and you're betting it on it. May just has more bust potential to me than Daniels.
Yeah. Definitely possible. I mean, I would be shocked if both of them aren't solid starters. The big thing is to me with Drake May is like, you've known this forever. I fall in love with tools. And I know that
you love
Jaden has awesome
big tool
tools,
guy,
but like
the all time tool guy.
Give me the Justin Herbert, Josh Allen build.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can do. And the thing about this is like, say the Vikings trade up to three and they get whoever of Drake May and Jaden Daniels, there's a really good chance because he's going into a situation with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Hawkinson,
Kevin O'Connell,
an offensive line, and Kevin O'Connell.
And a great
that quarterback will most likely produce more in his career. Like those are just the odds. It's a much more stable organization and they play in a dome, which makes a huge difference for quarterback play. So it's going to be an ongoing evaluation, but I do think we'll know pretty early with the quarterbacks. Like we'll know pretty early if they can play or not.
Okay, so here's one for you. So Jim Harbaugh is a maniac, right?
Yes.
And he's very unpredictable. And I'm not saying I'm manifesting this into reality, but like, let me ask you, what would you, if the Chargers called and said, we want to go up to two? Because Harbaugh's like, I want to get my guy. I want JJ. Harbaugh, who's been quoted as saying that he thinks JJ should be the number one overall pick. They have done nothing this offseason. They've sold their, they've sold their best players. I mean, they brought back Mack and Bosa, but offensively, Keenan Allen's gone. All right. So what would you give the Chargers to get Justin Herbert?
Oh, number two pick and a cocaine heartbeat.
Okay. So here's what I would give. I'm dead serious. And people think I'm crazy. Yeah. I would swap 2 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
So take Herbert, and then at 5 you take Joe Alt if he's there. So you get Herbert and a franchise left tackle, and I would legitimately give them 2025, 2026, 2027 ones.
Wow, I mean that's a lot. I guess it depends on the eval of the quarterbacks because the quarterback rookie contract is so valuable.
That's the thing.
Just being able to build with it, and obviously Herbert's going to, I can't remember if he signed his mega deal or he's going to this offseason. But
you get a guy who's a lock, basically top 6-7 guy in his prime for 10 years. What is that worth?
Higher. I think he's higher. I think
top
outside
three?
Of. So, I mean, I think that to me, it's like obviously Mahomes in the league of his own. And then you've got Allen, Burrow, Lamar. And then it's Herbert and Stroud. Those are the guys. And like the situation with Herbert is so interesting because he's an elite processor. He obviously has ridiculous physical tools. He hasn't won a lot of games. He's a 500 quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then also the roster they built for him, to me, is like you have a Lamborghini and you're driving it in a parking lot. Like they had the slowest receivers in the NFL. They had possession receivers. And it's like explosives have become such a big part of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And they're harder to come by as DBs move further back and they want quarterbacks to take smaller chunks over the middle of the field, but you still see these best quarterbacks able to be aggressive and throw the ball downfield. Whether or not that's Herbert's processing, he's always going to make the safe choice, or because of the personnel in the Chargers, I think that's the more interesting question. My gut is it's the personnel. Keenan Allen's an awesome football player. Mike Williams is, when he was healthy, a very good football player, but those are not guys who are taking the top off the defense guys whatsoever. And Quentin Johnson was an unmitigated disaster.
Unmitigated. So, but another way of saying this is, would you trade JJ McCarthy? Okay. and three ones for Malik Nabers / Marvin Harrison Jr. and Justin Herbert.
I mean, it's really tough. I mean, I'd
have to do that deal, dude.
I think you probably do, but you also like the three first round picks could just be soul crushing.
Like they could, but also like you're looking back on that. Jamin Davis, Jahan Dotson, and Emmanuel Forbes for Justin Herbert. I mean, obviously, hopefully we draft better, but like there's no locks in round one. I don't know. I personally think first round picks are generally overrated. And I think the teams that seem to really crush it, crush rounds, you know, end of two to round five.
Yeah. That's definitely true. And it's like it's just the flexibility of having first round talent on deals, and you're giving three shots at that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just quarterbacks. I'm going to give a couple really extreme examples here. So I'm not saying any of these players will be as good on their rookie contracts as these guys, but you can see really fast turnarounds when you get a star player, even if it's not a quarterback on a rookie deal. And Marvin Harrison Jr. is someone who might fall into that. Mm-hmm. Like Randy Moss turned a 9-8 Vikings team into a 15-1 Vikings team that was a missed kick away from going to the Super Bowl as a rookie. JJ Watt won three defensive player of the years on his rookie contract. Von Miller was essentially the finisher on a Broncos team that won the Super Bowl on a rookie contract. Mm-hmm. All those guys, I mean, Randy Moss had dropped because of other issues. He's probably the best college receiver of all time statistically before that. And Von Miller is second pick in the draft. JJ Watt, I think, went 10th or 11th in that range. So they're all over the board. But just if you hit on a couple of those guys in the first round, they can be really special. Of course, if you hit on guys later, I mean, you can look at the way the Seahawks built their team. Mm-hmm. If you go back to the 2011 draft, they got Bobby Wagner and Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin, I think, in the mid rounds. And mm-hmm. Doug Baldwin is an undrafted free agent. So there's a lot of different ways to build your teams.
Yeah.
And building identity, but giving up picks is really, really just lowers your margin.
Yeah.
Really lowers
your
margin.
Agreed. I just think it's and I'm like anti sell the farm guy. But I think it's really interesting when you have the use case of a lock known commodity franchise quarterback. We've never seen one of those guys in their prime go to market truly.
Yeah.
That's like a top five guy. What is Mahomes worth? You know,
I mean, we saw what Deshaun Watson was worth, and he was never as good of a player as Justin Herbert. Period.
No.
Before all of his off the field issues, to say the least, he was never as he was someone who was a gamer, but he wasn't a player like Herbert.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't as
good as Herbert. Yeah.
Usually, though, the scary part is usually when there's a franchise quarterback that's on the move, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
Packers with Rodgers, the Seahawks mm-hmm. with Russell Wilson. They were delighted to get him out the door. So I'm always wary.
They're
like, that's true. We're willing to give you Justin Herbert. My first question would be why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, that was a fun thought exercise. Let's get into the golf. So tell me about the trip. You went, 2 weeks ago?
Last weekend.
Okay. So how's your game trending leading up to the trip? Kind of between when we recorded last. So give the listener an update.
When we recorded last, I was just getting into it. The goal was to break 100, and that actually happened pretty quickly. My swing is, Andy's seen my swing. I've sent it to a bunch of people. I have like a steep, but pretty fluid golf swing. I'm able to generate some speed. And so pretty quickly, ball striking with my irons became pretty good. Good enough to like get around a muni course, not getting that much trouble. Even if you're off the tee, I was able to get, you know, pin high in a couple shots and score. My lowest 9-hole round, I probably played 15 rounds of golf last summer, which is great, and practiced another handful of times. And my lowest round on 9 holes was a 41. And that, I really wasn't four putting ever. And played the par 3s well, the par 5s well. I had a couple rounds. I had an 88, and then a lot of rounds in the low 90s. And it was consistent.
So you quickly went from try to break 100 to now we're you're shooting 88, you're 9 holes, 41. You got much better very fast.
much better, very fast. And like, there was like, so I went to Innisbrook last year with my college friends, and that was the first time I played a hard course. We played the course where they have the Valspar.
Yeah, they just had it last weekend. Copyright.
I think I shot like a 102. I think I shot a 102 there. And even their south course, their island course, it's obviously much harder than the courses I'd been playing, and my scores went up, and I was like, okay, but I was still hitting the ball pretty well.
Yeah.
We did a lot of messing around. Like, I was trying to hit stingers off the tee, going driver every, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, it wasn't less serious, but still was like mostly the upward trajectory. The things that really improved were my full swing golf shot. I definitely don't have the touch and feel. Like, when someone's like saw off a 9-iron and take a 3/4 swing, I end up babying it or blading it, things like that.
Yeah.
The like things where it becomes not the, where it's not the situation I'm used to, where it's not my stock yardages. Those are a lot harder for me. And the driver is the driver really comes and goes. Like, when I'm hitting it well, I hit sort of a tight draw. And when I don't, I can really spray it right, which is
And what's kind of the miss with the driver? It's right.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Snap hook the driver. And all my clubs, like when I'm actually like getting my club face square in the hitting zone, it's a pretty natural tight draw, which I actually think is probably from a mix of growing up playing baseball with you and a little bit of tennis, where you have that outswing pattern.
Yeah, a lot of tennis guys tend to draw it.
Yeah. And I think it's just like, because you slot your elbow in a pretty extreme way in tennis, and then push your racket face away from you. And I assume that's what's giving me the type of RPMs to draw a little bit.
Yeah.
But so that's always been like, the thing that I'm learning is that like, I'm trying to be able to self-correct mistakes and realize like when I'm spraying the ball, it's clearly a swing path issue. I'm not just like blocking it alignment wise. It's the swing path gets off. And, what's interesting with tennis, like, it's so much of it's up and down. You're trying to get the ball up and down with topspin. That the majority of the fixes when your swing gets sloppy is to actually just accelerate into the ball, which is great. And I know that's true in golf too. Don't get lazy at the bottom. But what I can have is I'll get really steep and really fast in transition, and my swing will get longer, and then things start slicing. My hands come too far inside, et cetera.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So, and we'll get into some of the specifics there, but you're starting to kind of learn what your patterns are. And then starting to figure out like, what are the feels that work for you to like alleviate those patterns in like kind of real time. Right. And that's kind of the journey that I think every golfer like goes on. Like when they, it's like the hockey stick of like, play, get way better, you know, and then taper off. And then it becomes about like, okay, can I like adjust? Can I figure out what's going on in real time and like make little tweaks and adjustments to, you know, hit the ball a little better, a little straighter. And it's really about like knowing your patterns and then knowing like what feels you need to have that can help you, that you can go to like when those patterns start coming out. Right.
Right. Right. And that's, and those things also like the more I'm playing, like, I've taken a couple lessons and those have like minor swing changes. Like I'm trying to start my swing with more core rotation, get my left shoulder to the ball rather than being handsy and taking the club up immediately. And those things are great. And that's the long-term fix. But the short term of it is it also becomes slightly harder to feel those things. Like on this trip at Pinehurst, it was like after a minor swing change and you just feel less comfortable refining your pattern.
Yeah, for sure. Swing changes are super hard. And we talked about this on text, right? It's like, you know, the test is always, can you do it like consistently on the range, which takes like a while? And then can you do it consistently on the golf course? And then can you do it consistently under pressure? And then can you do it consistently in competition, right? And like, those are very different like levels. Cause like what I find is I always default to my patterns, especially as like pressure comes in, or even like pressure, like, oh, I'm playing a new golf course. I'm at Pinehurst. It's exciting. I want to test my game. Like what always comes out are like my patterns. So there's kind of this concurrent challenge of like both, can I do the like work to slowly rewire those patterns through practice and things like that? And can I also find some band-aids or some things that work out on the golf course? And I've kind of like I would say I've oscillated heavily between those two things. I've done a lot of swing changes throughout the years and a lot of like structural changes in my swing. To be honest, man, like what I find more and more is like, no matter how much I change my swing under pressure and on the gun, under the gun, like those patterns, like they come out. And so it really is more about learning to play with them and learning to like, what are the things I need to do? You know, whether it's like setup or ball flight or stock shots I can go to that like complement my patterns or are you know, what's the word, or a nice like matchup with like what I naturally do, right? So we could talk about some of that because it sounds like with driver it's kind of right. I totally know that miss. What about with irons, like contact wise, is it heavy, thin?
This was the thing that was interesting, is that up until I went to Pinehurst, I wasn't really like thinning or chunking irons. I had like a stretch where I was hitting them like pretty pure. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you miss left, you miss right. Those things, like I'm not a,
but like contact was good.
Contact was always good. Like,
yeah.
And one of the things that I think I'm pretty good at was, is like sort of the, which is probably not good for storing at all, was you play on like a DC Muni course, is I always sort of feel like I could make a, like a hero shot to get out of jail. Like hitting the ball high enough or hitting the ball low enough and like adjusting the ball flight. And when I got to Pinehurst, the first round was like really up and down, but then on number two I had a couple misses off the first tee with driver. I'm not making excuses, didn't really want to hit the driver, got sort of pressured into hitting the driver up the first tee.
I know that tee shot.
Spray
kind of like
him into the
Did you miss him right? Right is like dead there.
And then had to hit a 7-iron backwards and then chunk my next iron and then scald the next one.
And that's a diabolical green too.
It's like, get me off this hole. Then ended up like 30 yards off the green, tried to putt with a hybrid, cut it off the back of the turtleback green. It's like anything but this. So that was the thing, is that I sort of lost confidence a little bit in my irons on playing number two the second day.
And what do you think that was? The turf was different, or?
Honestly, so I definitely was not choking, but like hitting the ball like straight up off of the pine straw. Mm-hmm. Not hitting it off the grass was mm-hmm. very different. And I actually think that like part of it became mental. I was trying to like fix the contact point, and then so I got lazy at the bottom and was definitely mm-hmm. selling into the ball.
Trying to steer it kind
of. Yeah. And just being like, just find the back of the ball rather than just being like, okay, you have a decent swing, you have good speed, just accelerate through the ball, transfer your weight. And it's something that I found in tennis too. And I'm sure I did it in every swinging sport, was when I decel too, I don't transfer my weight. I stay on my right foot in the back of my stance. And then you're sort of leaning, the club face is not bouncing off the turf the way you want it. And you're just either, you know, thinning it or popping it right up, depending
on
where the ball is in your stance, or at least that's what it felt for me.
So do you, so you played number two, number four, what else did you play?
We played 2, 4, 8 in the cradle.
That's great. Yeah. So what a great trip. And you kind of just like you said, basically like you were humbled. Like it was.
So we played 4 first and we had caddies, and it was this was sort of like the classic bad round for me, where I think I made 7 pars over the 18 holes. But then I also think I made like 7 double pars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like that was like, I left that round being like, that's fine. I hit some like awesome golf shots. Like out of jail a couple times. It was like a long par 5. I sprayed my tee shot into the other tee box and hit a hybrid off the deck. Like, and then chipped in, got up and down, saved par. And then on number two, I just like had like an uncharacteristically bad ball striking day. I knew I stopped keeping score midway through the round. It was just like, and hit some good golf shots. Hit some good golf shots. Had an amazing caddy who was an ex nationwide tour player.
Oh, nice.
Who was like, and like, here's the thing: you can't have a bad day on a golf course.
It's the best.
So like I wasn't like mad. Nor was I like particularly frustrated. I just wanted to do better, if that makes any sense. Like I wasn't like, oh God, I wish I hadn't played this round. I was just like, I want to find the solution to hit the ball better. And yeah, the caddy was like, once I stopped keeping score, if I shake the tee shot, I took a second one, made sure I hit some good golf shots over the course of the day, but they were just much fewer and far between. Like,
yeah,
I definitely was not used to a course where I just like couldn't find a way to string together good shots.
Yeah. And when you maybe gone, so it sounds like things kind of just went off the rails on two, which happens. Like it starts snowballing, you lose confidence. Like, right, you gotta find a way to like reset. But it sounds like you hit some really good shots the first day. On the holes where you're like making big number. So it sounds like you're either playing the hole well or you're making a big number. On the holes that you're making big numbers, is there like a common denominator there? Are there like, if you evaluate it, like, is it trouble off the tee? Is it like sloppy around the greens? Is it not taking your medicine? Like what would you say is the kind of.
So a couple of the big numbers that I had on two were like the beginner big numbers. They had the fences up to start getting ready for the US Open.
Okay.
And so I hit a couple balls out of bounds. Mm-hmm. Then you're hitting your third from the pine straw if you don't hit your drive perfectly straight on those narrow fairways.
Yep.
And you're just not advancing the ball that much. Normally, the pattern that I have is too many three putts and too many double chips.
Okay.
Field shots around the green are normally the places where I can get in trouble. But this was much more driver and just not matriculating the ball down the fairway with ball striking. Mm-hmm.
Not advancing the golf ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're kind of spraying it off the tee and it's generally like a rightward miss.
It was generally a right miss. And then trying to swing too hard and topping balls or chunking balls as
okay.
the second or third shot.
Got it.
Which I don't think is going to be something that will plague me long term in my golf career.
I'm
better at this, but that was definitely something that on that day, it was tougher to find.
Yeah. And you said something to me when we were talking about like learning at it. Maybe it finds have a stock shot that you know you can like hit out in the fairway. Maybe talk me through that thought process.
Yeah. So on eight, the third round we played, we didn't have caddies, we were in carts, and it was much more up and down. Like we were all messing around. No one was really keeping score as fastidiously as they had in other rounds. And so on 17 and 18, I put the ball slightly further back in my stance, moved the grip slightly ahead, addressed the ball with the grip slightly ahead of the ball, and tried to hit stingers off the tee with my hybrid, which is a three hybrid. Mm-hmm. And it's something I actually need to practice. But I was hitting them. I don't know how far they're carrying, but the rollout was between 240 and 255 straight. And I was like, I wish I had found this the day before, because that's something that would have put me in a much better position with a lot more swing confidence.
Yeah.
And I feel like the hybrids, I know it's like a amateur golfer's best friend, because you can swing it like an iron, or at least I can swing it like an iron. It's a much shorter club for me. And you can swing down on it and, generate more club head speed than hitting the ball with the driver.
Yeah. So I think, all right, so let's get into like, So that's the synopsis. Kind of went down there, learned some things about your golf game. You left loving golf just as much as when you were there. So that's a huge win.
More. I just want to play golf all the time. Yeah.
So I love that. I love that. So what I would say, a couple things are just general like thoughts as we think about like the prescription here. And would love our listeners to in the Instagram comments to jump in with like thoughts or tidbits for Charlie. So first of all, I think it's great that you're getting a handicap index. That's really important. I think I have a couple of ideas for you. It's really probably two things. And these are all things from like my experience, because I have been in the exact same boat as you, like getting into golf. And then I remember I went to Sea Island with my dad. It was like the first like big trip I took, and I stunk. And I was like hitting it everywhere. And there's a couple things that like I've learned over time that have really helped me. So number one is, have you heard of the like think box, play box, kind of idea? Okay. So really being able to lean into a, really rock solid, good pre-shot routine, is something that like is so important. And the reason that it's like really important is because, you want to be able to like reset on every shot, and kind of like be a goldfish, right? Like forget about the last shot and move on to the next one. And the pre-shot routine can be like a good trigger to do that. And then the like, process, golf is so interesting and it's so different from like other sports, you know, like baseball, for example. I remember in baseball, like whenever I wasn't like playing well, or like I wasn't like having good at bats, the answer was always like, just like try harder. And like in football, it's like just hustle more, or like hit somebody hard, you know, like whatever. In golf, it's like, that is the worst thing you can do. And when you start like steering the ball or like trying to manufacture the shot, that's when all the like bad stuff starts happening and you become like really like results oriented, where you're like, and I know that feeling where it's like, I'm trying to just like steer the ball around the golf course, right? And so the think box, play box thing is like, what you do is you draw an imaginary line like 6 feet behind the ball. And for me, like the way I do this is like my imaginary line 6 feet behind the ball, that's my think box. And in my think box, that's where I like figure out the yardage. That's where I figure out like what the wind's doing. That's where I figure out like what club I'm going to hit, right? And I also in my think box might play around with some feels that I have that I'm working on that day, you know, for me, like whatever my tendency is at the moment, you know, like right now the club's getting a little bit across the line at the top. So I might take some kind of rehearsals where I feel the club a little more, you know, laid off, right? Whatever it is, it changes over time. So that's my think box. And so I say, all right, this is 184, pin is on the right. No, I can't be right of this pin. I'm going to hit a cut. I know that, the best place to miss this is left. So I'm actually going to start this ball kind of left center of the green and let it cut to the middle of the green. If I block it a little bit, it's next to the hole. If I pull a little bit, I got the whole green to work with to get up and down. I know that's going to be a 7-iron for me. All right. I got my 7-iron. I'm in the think box. I'm committed to the shot. As soon as I step over the imaginary line between the think box and the play box, I'm in the play box, and the play box is no thoughts, right? It's all execution. And the only thought that I try to have like in that thought is just like be athletic and be committed. And so I'm not thinking about the shot. I'm not thinking about the result. I'm not thinking about what club I have in my hand. I'm not thinking about what I'm trying to do with my swing. I'm not thinking about any of that stuff. I'm just making a move. I'm just hitting the ball. I'm just trying to be athletic. And that, I think if you kind of incorporated something like that into your routine and game, that will really help you avoid the like spiral of like, okay, now I'm over the ball and I'm having thoughts and I am I going to thin this? Am I going to chunk this? Maybe I need to stand up on it, like whatever. Right. So maybe react to that. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the idea of like the think box, play box.
No, that's like a huge thing. Like what? So actually one of the things that I do rather than stand up or walk off or think about shots too much is like, I go fast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think about anything. I stand over the ball and I'm like, I'm gonna hit this hard.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's actually like, I keep bringing it back to tennis, but that's what I've been like a passion of mine for the last mm-hmm. several years. So like I've been playing like semi-competitively and playing in leagues and stuff. And one of the things in the coaching I've got with tennis is that when I've been playing slightly more poorly or not serving as well in particular. So the serve's the one shot you can control in tennis. It's the direct comp to golf. Like so much of it can depend on the court, the opponent, et cetera, the way the ball bounces. You don't dictate everything after the serve. The serve, you can put it theoretically wherever you want. When I serve badly, I forget my routine. I step up and I swing. If I miss, I just immediately take a second serve. I go way too fast. And
interesting,
definitely applies to golf, right?
So you're skipping the think box. Like, you're just like, you're just jumping right into the play box.
Completely skipping it.
Okay, got it.
And like, it's a play box that's it's tighter. It's not committed. You need a tight commitment. It's commitment issues. The play box has serious commitment issues. Once I start spiraling, or it's just like, just swing at this, get me off of this shot.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. So I think having discipline around the think box will be really good. Having a caddy can help, and getting into like a process with a caddy can help with that. But yeah, so that would be really good. And then the other thing I would say, which is just like me directionally, hopefully saving you like a couple of years of trial and tribulation. So I had the exact same thing, dude, with like my driver, where I would have this just, and I still do, like it still comes in, where I have this like off the planet right miss, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a 100-yard block and it's out of bounds and it's out of play and it's like death. And so I went down the same rabbit hole of like, all right, like I'm going to learn to hit a 2-iron. I got a 2-iron. All right, let me get a 3-wood that's like a little stronger. I got a 3-wood. Like, and I tried a lot of different clubs. I ended up coming really like full circle back to that and realizing like, dude, like what I really need to do is just like get good at hitting my driver and spend all my time practicing on that. And the like swing fault, once I like figured out the swing fault for me that causes like the off the map right miss, and I just took that miss away and made it like a lot smaller, gave me so much more confidence with the driver and so much more confidence like getting around the golf course. And so I think, you know, like for guys that and anyone that like tends to be a little bit steeper, you know, for you, like looking at your swing, like it's not like too steep. But like your tendency is to get a little steep. It's the same thing with mine. And then actually, because driver's like a longer club, we end up compensating for that. And so a lot of people, like for me, my tendency under pressure is always I get steep with the driver shaft, and then I end up sliding my lower body and basically dumping my hands underneath and then hitting big blocks, because I know that if I'm steep, like I can't hit the ball. And so it's actually a way for me to like hit the ball, and it actually like works to hit the ball. And so like getting step at one, the corner of that like swing of that like flaw, I would say like I would focus mainly there, because like you're gonna have to hit the driver good to score well.
Yeah.
That's just like science. And the reality is like even a 3-wood, you're going to spray, even another club, like you're going to spray. And so I would just triple down on working on the driver. And then I would experiment with like different, maybe shots you can have with the driver, you know? So for me, like, you know, I've tried to kind of build over the years, like a shot where it's like more of a fairway finder swing with my driver. And it's like, I know if I tee it down a little bit lower, I move the ball position forward, that kind of takes the right thing a little bit out. I feel like I hit a little bit down on it, and I keep the face shut. It kind of produces this like low cut that I know like, hey, like I can generally hit that thing out there somewhere.
Yeah.
So I would say work on your flaw with your driver, and then see if you can find a, like a stock go-to shot with that club, you know, play around with ball position, play around with tee height, play around with different feels and say, oh, I know I can hit a rope draw with this thing that's like low and it's like not pretty, but it like freaking works and it gets the ball on the fairway, you know?
No, that's the thing too. And I think this is the thing about being like a decent athlete who picks up golf too, is that like, the driver I know is the key for me to improve my scoring, because like the club head speed is there, the ball speed's there, and it's just like leaving so much distance and so many more easy shots to the table to leave that.
Yes. Bag. It's everything, man. It's everything.
But
it's not fun when you're hitting it everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not fun when you're hitting it. Yeah. So I think I would just say like work on that part of the game. Like, dude, there's times where I go to the range and I just hit drivers, honestly. Like, I don't even hit irons. Like, because it's just like, I know, like, if this club's working, like, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to have wedges into greens. And unless I'm like horrible at putting, it's going to be hard for me to shoot like a really bad number, you know? Cause like the ROI, and this is maybe something for the listeners, is like, you have to think about like, where is the maximum ROI for me? Like, especially if you're, you know, like you and I, we both like have jobs and we have limited time to like dedicate to golf, right? Like, if I worked for the next year on my ball striking, like that might give me like 10 feet closer to the hole. Like that might be like, you know, like on average or whatever, right? Like I'm still going to like hit bad shots. Like the ROI is like, you know, a couple shots around, right? Like, if I work on like my driver and I'm not a good driver, like the ROI is like 10 shots around, you know, it's like three balls I hit out of bounds that like don't go out of bounds and are now like 60 yards from the flag and I have a flip wedge in. Like that's four shots like right there, right? And so yeah, it's people like talk about like, oh, drive for show, putt for dough. It's like, not really, dude. Like if you don't drive it good, like you're not going to be a good player. Like that's just like, I don't know anybody that's like a really good player that drives it like shit, you know?
That's like everything.
I think it's got to be kind of like serving in tennis where it's like,
yes,
if you just don't have like a serve that's like reasonable, like it doesn't matter how good you are at like everything else, like you're not going to be very good. Is that fair?
You can be. So I mean, it's tennis has like, you have like NTRP ratings, you have like, it's the equivalent of a handicap,
mm-hmm.
and you can be, you know, a 30 handicap with a bad serve.
Yeah.
You can't be the equivalent of a single digit with a bad serve.
Yeah. It's not going to happen.
It's the most important shot. And if you basically start dreading your service games, you can't start with an advantage.
So yeah.
Like starting every hole with advantage, you can't be really good and you can't play real points with better players.
Yeah.
So that's a huge, huge part of it.
The other thing I would say, what driver is in the bag right now?
I have a TaylorMade Stealth driver.
Okay. So you got fitted for that, for right?
Clubs. Yeah. I got
fitted for clubs.
Got an extra stiff shaft.
Good.
Don't have a long arm. So it's like a quarter of an inch longer.
Do you know how much loft is on your driver?
9.
Okay. This is another thing is like, one of the things you can do is like rig your equipment to minimize like your big miss. And so there's certain things we could do with your driver in the sleeve, in the setting. So if we actually added, a little bit of loft to your driver, like if we went up to 10 degrees from 9, every degree you go up in loft will actually shift the face 2 degrees. If you go up in loft, it'll close the face 2 degrees, 1 degree to 2. If you go down in loft, it'll open the face 2 degrees, 1 degree to 2. So if you actually set your driver up 1 degree in loft, it's going to shut the face 2 degrees, which is going to help alleviate a little bit of that big red miss and help you square the face a little bit better, more consistently. So that's something you can think about. The other thing, if you move the weight more in the driver, if you move the weight in the heel of the driver, it'll encourage the toe to kind of come around a little bit more. And so there's some things like setup wise, and you know, you'll start like, you're like, oh, I know. Now that you know what your pattern is, which is like off the planet right miss with driver, you can start to like get in the kitchen and be a chef and figure out like, all right, what are things I can do to alleviate this? So it's really good that you're like learning these things because, like all golf is it's like finding the recipe for like what the fix is on this thing that I struggle with, you know?
That's exactly it. And like the best rounds of golf I've ever played are days where I hit the driver well.
Yeah.
And like hands down, all of the best rounds, I think I've texted you after both, most of them were like, hit all six fairways on this front nine.
Yeah.
Had my best number ever.
Yeah. It's a direct line to like, if you drive it good, you can only play so bad when you drive it really good.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And the thing is for you, go ahead.
I was going to say, definitely need to, I was actually thinking about adjusting the equipment when I was talking to the caddy in Pinehurst. It was actually similar to when I got fitted for my clubs. They were like, you're sort of a unique young golfer. Mm-hmm. And then the swing speed doesn't match the experience right now.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you got fitted for the way this club is set up now is for someone who generates the speed that you do, but can control it a little bit better. So you might
Kind
of adjust it to something more forgiving.
Yeah, you could add a little loft, which will help. But yeah, I think it's always good to get fit into the clubs that you're going to be playing, because then you're going to just like need new ones again, and you're going to get through this period so fast. But yeah, I think, my thoughts, and this is for our listeners too. It's like, I think this is a really helpful series for people, especially like, because everybody that plays golf has like been on the journey of like getting better over time. And we all, you know, learn things about our own game. We learn things about like, and you can save someone a lot of time, right? Like Charlie, you know, was going to go buy a 2-iron or try to figure out a way to hit stingers in the fairway. And he's going to, you know, and like, that's fine. Like I did that. Everybody that's ever played golf has like gone down that rabbit hole of saying like, hey, I'm going to, dude, as recently as like 2 months ago, I almost bought a mini driver. So like it's the same shit,
like
right?
Like Bryson.
And the answer is always like, you know, like, well, at least with that club, it's like, you just have to be good at hitting the driver and you have to, learn what your patterns are and like work on that aspect of the game. And yeah, it's just like, you can only play so bad when you're driving it good. Like the misses are like to a green that's 130 yards out or 180 yards out, you know, your score relative to par, if you're in the middle of the fairway, is so much higher than if you're back on the tee and you don't know if you're going to hit it in the fairway or you're going to hit it out of bounds and have to re-tee. And so,
Exactly. And the other thing is like, the big thing is like, for me also, if it becomes a hole where I have to hit like 2 5 irons really pure, hit like 210 yard 5 irons on a dime, that's a lot more difficult, even though I'm not like the best with my wedges. That's a lot more difficult to hit two of those in a row pure directionally that I want than a driver and then, you know, 110 yard.
Yeah. And what I was going to say too, is the other thing about you is because you do have like speed, right? Like, and this is, you got to kind of know your recipe, like, because Charlie has like natural club head speed. So like, I wouldn't probably be saying the same thing to someone who like has 100 mile an hour or 95 mile an hour club head speed. I wouldn't be like, hey, work on the driver, because when you get it, the driver's going to be a weapon for you. Right. I'd be like, no, like, you know, you're never going to like be a weapon with the driver. And like with your swing speed, your miss can only be so bad anyway. So it's like, yeah, work on your putting, work on your chipping. Like that's going to be where you gain shots. For you, like the thing is like, again, the ROI, it's back to that ROI kind of like analysis. It's saying like, if you're good at this, not only does this specific tool, is it going to help you the most, but it's also going to become your biggest weapon, because when you have speed and you can, you know, bomb a golf course, like it's a game changer, man. Like for me, like, all I worked on this winter was just like speed, and I got my driver club head speed up. Like I noticed last year, like I made some swing changes and things like that. And like, I was swinging it like really slow last year, like, and not hitting it far. Like I was swinging my driver like 107 miles an hour. And so I was like, that's weird. And so I just went back to like, all right, I need to get some speed back. And I've just worked on speed all winter, and I got my club head speed, you know, I hit 130 2 weeks ago with driver. And like now I'm just speed training. So I'm like sitting in the low 120s, which is like pretty fast for me.
Yeah.
And all I care about really, like, honestly, this year, like all I care about is just like driving the shit out of it and my wedge play and my putting. Like I'm probably going to hit like 50 golf balls on the range this year with an iron. Cause I've just realized like, dude, all I need to do is just be like average to below average as a ball striker. If I can drive it the way I'm capable of and with my short game, like I'm going to score really well. And so very different approach, but like last year I worked on my ball striking all year and I sucked, you know, it's like, and I lost speed with the driver. My short game got worse. I'm like, man, like this isn't the recipe for me. Like I've got to know like my DNA. And it's just like, I'm never going to be an incredible ball striker if I can just be average as a ball striker compared to, you know, like a +2 handicap. If I can be average or below average, like relative to a scratch, I know that I drive it. Like when I drive it really good, I drive it like a plus three or four. You know, that's my, that's what the data says. There have been rounds where I've driven it like a plus six, literally. And my short game is like pretty good when it's on. So it's like, you just got to lean into those things that like, you know, can be weapons for you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited for you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And the short game will come with, I know that's so much more feel. Like that's just practicing and playing around I'm not putting any pressure on myself to figure that out because like I have good hands. That'll happen over time as I
totally
play more and play different games. And greens aren't Pinehurst where
Pinehurst has some diabolical dreams. Yeah. So did you guys did you get any merch when you were there? Did you get any sweet merch?
I got so many Q-zips. I'm definitely gonna lick the part.
I've never met a pro shop that I didn't want to go hard in.
Did it the cradle logo with the little C, the guy sitting just getting that hat.
Yeah. We'll probably do some on-course stuff with Charlie this summer. Because we're getting him up to Minnesota, up to Winsong. Probably have him play in the Friday game. By then he'll have a full gin handicap. So he can take everybody's money and we can take his money. Those are the big things we wanted to cover today. You know, just lean into that driver, think box, play box. I think those things will really, really help you. And the last one, which we texted about too, was just like we talked about this, like, and it's very true. When you get into your like routine, you know, like you play with the same guys, you play the same course, it gets really comfortable, you know? That's the other thing. Like you learn, right? When you go to Pinehurst or whatever, and you're in a new environment, it's like, ooh, it's not one-to-one, the transfer.
Totally. I was playing with an NFL player who keeps a religious handicap and puts everything out. And he's 6'5", 300 pounds, and he doesn't even have to swing hard to hit the ball out deep in the fairway. And where the caddy's carrying both of our bags and feeling pressure hitting it near him. And you know,
so different.
It's so different. Totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. So seeing, you know, I would try to start, you know, seeing, okay, can I simulate pressure in my like buddy's game? You know, play for a little bit of money, like whatever it is. You know, like definitely. Just talk a bunch of shit and like put yourself out there. Like whatever it is that you gotta do to dial up the pressure on yourself. That's that can only help.
Definitely. No one's better at promising than me.
Yeah. On a quick side note, Charlie and I think we might have touched on this in the last pod before we wrap, but it was like maybe 10 years ago. I had like no idea growing up that Charlie secretly was like going to tennis camps in the summer and like good at tennis. Like it was not something he ever talked about or told anyone about. He was always like a football player. He played on the baseball team. Like no idea that he was like a closet tennis player. And like, I started playing tennis like 10 years ago and I got like decent, like probably not too dissimilar from like Charlie's golf journey, but I'm definitely not as advanced as you are now, but like maybe where you were 6 months ago, where I was like playing regularly, like once or twice a week, like got all right at it. Like got to where I could like slap it around. And on the text thread, Charlie was like, oh yeah, like I will dominate you in tennis. And I was like, what? Like, no, dude, like I'll smoke you in tennis. Like I've been playing, like I'm good at it. You're like, no, I will absolutely destroy you in tennis. And I'm like, again, no context of knowing that you secretly went to closet, like Carl Kravitz sponsored tennis camps and like played regularly. And your brother like played in college. Like I didn't know any of this. Like, and, we had this like match set up. It was going to be this whole thing. We were going to put it on like Facebook Live. Like, and I was just like, I was 100% convinced that like, I was going to smoke him. And I think I saw like a video or somebody talked to me and was like, dude, like he's actually really good at tennis. And as soon as I figured that out, just immediately bailed.
I mean, technically you're 1-0 because I didn't bring my tennis racket to Scottsdale. Where we wouldn't be doing this podcast today if we had played in the 110 degree heat because we would either hate each other or both be dead.
Yeah. Oh, that was the stuff of legends, man. That there was so much shit talking going back and forth for like 2 months about this tennis match, and we just ended up not playing it. And looking back, I'm so glad we didn't play it because I would have gotten rocked.
I'm bombing the ball right now. The tennis court.
Oh, I can only imagine, dude. Yeah. So
one day we'll get you back into tennis. It's a great sport. It's definitely good for golf because you're tracking a ball. It's good to get your hand set. It's good to get your elbow slotted and get used to that body motion. It's the same. The weight transfer is much more similar from tennis to golf than it is from golf to baseball.
Mm-hmm. Are you a pickleball guy too?
I love pickleball. A lot of tennis players hate pickleball because they think it's like bullshit. But
yes,
it's so fun. Everyone can play.
Yeah,
it's exhausting. I'm not saying.
Yes. One thing I've never done. So, all right. Well,
dude, you'll be sick. You'll be sick immediately at pickleball with your hand lungs. Like, yeah, I promise you, day one, you will be as good as me at pickleball. That's a
all right. We'll give our listeners updates with Charlie's updated swing videos, maybe some photos from Pinehurst, and consider this like a mid-year update on Charlie's game. This is going to be our guy that member guest podcast. We carry him all the way down to a single digit handicap, and we get to like observe his journey from like, can I break 100 to like, I'm a 9. And that's going to be the goal here. Yeah. So sweet, man. All right. Well, great to catch up, buddy.
Appreciate it.
All right. Talk soon.